Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Sunday Wire. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. We're streaming out live on the Alternate Current Radio Network and also at 21stCenturyWire.com. And what a fantastic segment by our last guest, Mark Sloboda, who is joining us on the live link from Moscow. If you missed any of that on the live broadcast, you can go back and listen to the podcast on the archive stream. It'll be on the show page, but it'll also be up at iTunes and also at Podomatic and some of the other platforms for those of you listening out there. And there's a story which is up on 21st Century Wire right now, and this is quite an extraordinary story. Now, this is something that a lot of people might have been aware of aspects of this in the past, but it's the first time it's been pulled together in one sort of comprehensive investigation. This is a story by our next guest. She's a journalist from Bulgaria, based in Sofia, and you would have known her for the story which she broke with True Newspaper last year, and this is about weapons trafficking coming out of Eastern Europe using diplomatic flights with a contractor out of Azerbaijan, U.S. defense contractors procuring the arms paid for by the Saudis into the hands of ISIS and al-Nusra in the region. And this is a weapons trafficking racket which Diliana uncovered. So Diliana Gitiniera is joining us right now. This story she's got this week is about a U.S. network of bioweapons laboratories and facilities, which is global. And mainly we're talking about the Eurasian facilities that are kind of, if you look at them on the map, quite amazingly, are kind of encircling the underbelly of Russia. And these are offshore facilities. I don't know to what level they're legal, but certainly this is a myriad of government contractors, classified operations, all sorts of diplomatic immunity is involved here. Diliana is going to tell us about this story. Thank you for joining us, Diliana.
Firstly, Patrick, let me thank you personally for supporting my investigations and for publishing today this investigation, because not that many brave journalists dare to publish such stories and to raise this issue. It cost a lot of courage, and I personally thank you for that. Back to the topic, this is an investigation again into the Pentagon weapons programs, but now we are talking about a different type of weapons. When I first published the Silk Way story on the diplomatic flights carrying weapons to terrorists in Syria, in Yemen, in Pakistan, Afghanistan, etc., I didn't know that the Pentagon actually runs myriad weapons programs, and some of them are exactly the biological weapons programs. And I think that these programs are even more chilling and appalling than the program, the Silk Way weapons shipments to terrorists, because here we are talking about covert bioweapons a network of laboratories which are located all over the world. For sure, I know and I can document biolaboratories of the Pentagon in 25 countries. They are located mainly in former Soviet Union countries such as Georgia and Ukraine and Kazakhstan as well, also in the Middle East, Iraq and Afghanistan included, and Southeast Asia and Africa. What matters here is the fact that we don't see the consequences, but we can guess them. For example, in Africa, we had a huge and deadly outbreak, Ebola outbreak, with hundreds of thousands of people affected, and three of those Pentagon biolaboratories are located in the same countries and the same places at the epicenter of the Ebola crisis, not only Africa. If we talk about their main countries, which are located around Russia, Georgia, and Ukraine. In Ukraine, you have 11 biolaboratories funded by the Defense Threat Reduction Agency. This is a Pentagon agency, which funds all these biolaboratories and all these bioweapons projects. They are not officially named bioweapons projects. They are officially named, for example, biological defense projects, biological engagement projects, or whatever name they place under these projects. They are active biological weapons development and research projects, and the military documents attached to this article prove that even in the United States, I don't know how people there don't know this or how this information has been hidden by the American public, and I don't know why the American taxpayers are not informed how their money is spent, but in the United States, in the state of Utah, there is a military testing facility at Dugway Proving Ground. This is the same military facility which the U.S. Army used in the past to test its biological weapons. So in the same facility, according to the U.S. Army documents, their scientists produce live bioagents such as anthrax, also deadly toxins such as botulinum toxin, and many others. And this facility actually operates under the cover of defense. I don't know how the Pentagon can call this program defensive when they have spread military biolaboratories abroad in 25 countries across the globe.
The first thing I want to add here, Diliana, is, you know, all if you look at all the media coverage of bioweapons or bioterrorism or, you know, WMDs, it seems to all center around this bioterrorism threat. In other words, terrorists might get a hold, ISIS might get a hold of some one of these and then use it on the public, and that's seen as the number one threat. And so that they use that to justify these research programs. You even had a professor at the National Security Affairs, U.S. Naval War College, who said that ISIS terrorists would be human carriers of Ebola. In other words, they'll go and infect themselves with Ebola and then go into highly populated areas. I mean, just insane conspiracy theories coming out. But absolutely. but they don't talk about the states using biological weapons, because is it true? Do you think it's true that the number one biological weapons producer in the world is the United States of America?
Facts prove exactly this conclusion, and the documents and the photos prove that the United States now produces biological weapons, and not only produces viruses, bacteria and toxins, but also tests these bacteria, viruses and toxins at the Dugway Proving Ground for dissemination even by explosives. Can you imagine what defensive is there to develop such dissemination technology to spread viruses, bacteria and toxins, not only by aerosols, but also by explosives? For what? I mean, this is not a defensive. This is offensive military program. And it's very scary because for example, in some of the countries where these biolaboratories are located, I can give a lot of examples, but let's focus on Ukraine, because Ukraine has been in the news for quite some time. Here in Ukraine, We have 11 biolaboratories funded by the Defense Threat Reduction Agencies. And these 11 biolaboratories are located just in the same cities where inexplicable outbreaks appear quite regularly. And we're talking about outbreaks which are serious, which are dangerous, and outbreaks of diseases which are caused by bioagents. For example, in Ukraine, there was a huge outbreak of botulism. This is a dangerous and fatal disease if left untreated, caused by botulinum toxin poisoning. The police in Ukraine launched an investigation into an intentional poisoning of the population of Ukraine. I don't know the results of this police investigation, but the fact that the police in Ukraine has been investigating intentional poisoning of the population of Ukraine means that all these activities are not legal. I mean, there is information that somebody spreads diseases in Ukraine, because also the police launched an investigation into infection with incurable disease. I don't know why this information doesn't make headlines in Ukraine, in other countries. This is very serious. You have military biolaboratories on your territory, and you cannot control these military biolaboratories because I published, actually you published in on 21st Century Wire today, the agreement between Ukraine and the United States. And under this agreement, the military program is classified. It is sensitive information. Why is it sensitive? If the United States is there to help the Ukrainian people to be healthy and to fight the diseases, why is it sensitive? Why is it classified? And what is the United States hiding there? And we have a lot of outbreaks, dangerous and deadly for the Ukrainian people. I can give you another example. There was a case in 2016, a flu-like outbreak. Just in 2 days' time, more than 20 Ukrainian soldiers in Kharkov. This is an Ukrainian city where is one of the Pentagon biolabs, and 20 soldiers died in just 2 days' time, and 200 more were hospitalized. The Ukrainian government did not report on the dead Ukrainian soldiers, because under the agreement with the United States, the Ukrainian government is not allowed to publicly disclose such information. It is secret. In total, just for 2 months in Ukraine, there were more than 360 death cases of flu. Just a flu. You can imagine what this flu was, to kill 360 people in just 2 months. And it is not only Ukraine. The same is the story with Georgia as well. There, in the capital Tbilisi, the Pentagon has a military biolaboratory, which is called the Luga Center. And for example, why is the Pentagon collecting bats and kill them at the Luga Center? Why is the Pentagon collecting ticks and flies? And we're not talking about 10 or 20 or even 100 species. We're talking about 21,000 ticks collected and sent to this military biolaboratory for what? If you check the previous declassified documents related to the Pentagon bioweapons program in the past, you can see and you can find the answer. What and why the Pentagon is collecting insects, because insects are used as vectors of diseases. They can transmit by biting people dangerous diseases. That is why the Pentagon invested, and the U.S. in general, just a few years, more than 840 million dollars in synthetic biology. This money are spent for projects such as genetically engineered pathogens, genetically engineered insects, and some of the projects include creating and engineering insects to transmit genetically engineered viruses. This is scary. Why is the Pentagon funding such projects? Why is the Pentagon willing and funding the creation of killer insects? This means that we're talking about an offensive biological weapons program.
And so we're meant to believe, Mike, that Ebola jumped from African fruit bats to humans in 1976, and it just sort of took, you know, all this time to sort of make its way into sort of a big sort of supposed pandemic, but it wasn't a pandemic. But yet we see programs like this where they are working with bats and live cultures and insects. And we do have an outbreak in Kyrgyzstan, 2013, an outbreak of bubonic plague spread in Kyrgyzstan. They were afraid it was going to spread to Kazakhstan. And so that was the big fear then. We actually reported on that, 21st Century Wire, in 2014. And so 15 people died of the plague in Kyrgyzstan. And so the authorities insist that it was just some spontaneous, by chance, it just kind of, you know, appeared. They haven't I don't think they've isolated it completely, but there's some official explanation of how it started. But not far away within the sphere, we have these U.S. facilities doing what? I'm not sure.
The same story in Georgia and in Afghanistan. You have the same Pentagon contractors, private companies. I will talk about them later, just first to explain. You have the same dangerous diseases and the same Pentagon contractors and the same military biolaboratories in Georgia and in Afghanistan. And you have the same outbreaks of diseases which are spreading among the local population. Interestingly, for example, an outbreak of Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever in Georgia. More than 30 people became infected 2 years ago, and some of them died. Among the infected people was a four-year-old child. The government of Georgia couldn't find the source of the outbreak. Normally, this disease is supposed to spread to humans through a bite of a tick. None of the collected and examined ticks of all infected villages in Georgia at the epicenter of the outbreak, none of these ticks tested positive. Just one tested positive. And none of the blood samples collected by the animals, which are also supposed to spread this disease to humans, none of the samples tested positive for Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever. The question is how this disease spread to humans. And the answer is very, very simple. This disease and this outbreak was spread not naturally. It was spread intentionally. Now let me talk about the Pentagon contractors involved in this military program. The Defense Threat Reduction Agency has outsourced much of the work under the military program to private companies, which are not held accountable to Congress and which can operate more freely and they can move around the rule of law. U.S. civilian personnel performing work in Georgia, in Ukraine, and in other military biolaboratories around the world have also been given diplomatic immunity, although they are not diplomats. The question is, why are they operating under diplomatic cover? This means that private companies can perform work under diplomatic cover for the U.S. government without being under the direct control of the host state. For example, the Republic of Georgia, or Ukraine, or Iraq, Afghanistan, and so on. And this practice is often used by the CIA to provide cover for its agents. The same practice was used by the CIA for the Silk Way diplomatic flights with weapons. Again, the work was outsourced to private companies. Again, no control by the Congress. Again, the private contractors did not account to the Congress, and nobody knows what is hidden under this diplomatic cover. No checks, no inspection, nothing. These private contractors in Georgia, they have diplomatic vehicles. They can transport whatever you can think of. And especially in Georgia, can anybody answer the question, I mean anybody from the Pentagon, why the Pentagon funded a private contractor to carry out a program called Border Security in Georgia? This the very same project also was entrusted to the same company in Syria, in Libya, and in Jordan. This means that in this way, the Pentagon has direct control and direct access to areas which are of high interest to the Pentagon. In the case of Georgia, this is Russia. In the case of Libya, this is exactly the area which is again of high interest for the Pentagon, as well as Syria. So it is the cover of security, the cover of helping the local population. No, this is the direct access to Russia. And there were outbreaks in Russia as well. Somehow the very same pathogens jumped to Russia. We have witnesses' accounts
Look at the position of the facilities, Diliana. In terms of the ones that you've identified here in this group, it seems to me it's really kind of surrounding Russia. So, I mean, I don't mean to be conspiratorial, but it seems to me like if there is a active bioweapons program run by the United States, I would assume with the level of secrecy and security and diplomatic immunity that this is a possible strategy for the Pentagon in the future, which is biological warfare.
Let's answer to this question with another question. Why did the Pentagon research Russian anthrax? Anthrax is one of the bioagents weaponized by the U.S. Army in the past, and despite the Pentagon's claims that its program is only defensive, there are facts to the contrary. In 2016, for example, at the Lugar Center in Georgia, American scientists carried out research on the genome sequence of the Russian strain of the anthrax, for which Russia has vaccine, meaning that the Pentagon researched exactly the strain for which Russia has vaccine. What is this research for? I have no answer other than for attacking Russia in the future with anthrax, and Russia will not have vaccine for this anthrax.
A new genetically engineered anthrax, so that they don't have a vaccine for. So this is biological warfare.
Exactly, and the same scenario in China, by the way. A few days ago, the Pentagon chief announced that its main objective is a competition with Russia and with China. It may sound like conspiracy theory, and it did sound like a conspiracy theory to me as well before, but when I checked the military documents, I found out that the U.S. Has been secretly collecting biological material, especially by Russians and Chinese. I have no explanation as to why the Pentagon has been collecting saliva from Chinese people. Why are they collecting cancer tissue from Chinese patients? Also blood samples. And we're talking about not just one, two, or three projects. We're talking about tens of projects related to collection of DNA from Chinese people, and the same with Russia as well. There was a project carried out by the U.S. Army, the U.S. Air Force, on a collection of Russian RNA and synovial tissue. And in the documents, it was indicated that these samples should be only Russians, and the government would not consider taking samples from Ukrainians. And you start to ask yourself, is it possible and is it feasible the development of this is the so-called designer diseases. I found, and I also featured in this article, a military document which lists all possible biological weapons, and among them are the so-called designer diseases. Among the designer diseases are the so-called ethnic bioweapons, which means that diseases can be designed and engineered so that they can target a special genotypes and special ethnic groups. So far, nobody has ever confirmed the possibility of developing such ethnic bioweapons, but we have the facts, we have the documents, we have the military projects, and they raised the question, is it possible that the Pentagon is collecting DNA from its main rivals, Russia and China, in order to research possible ways of developing designer diseases for these two ethnic groups?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, bio-specific, genetic-specific bioweapons. That's something the DARPA is featured heavily. The U.S. defense research specialist, they're featured heavily in a lot of these programs. So we're seeing DARPA everywhere. It's a very well-funded part of the U.S. Department of Defense, and they do a lot of what they call experimental research and development as well. And so this is all paid for by the U.S. taxpayer. It's just, to me, amazing how much money goes into this.
It's ridiculous. Instead of spending money on the American people to get healthy, this money is spent to producing diseases. It's ludicrous. I just can't understand how is this possible. But it is possible. And the sad thing is that people don't know about that. And they don't know that their government funds projects on production of deadly viruses. And also, I was amazed to learn that enhanced potential pandemic pathogens experiments are legal in the United States. This means that scientists can engineer, can modify influenza, also Middle East respiratory syndrome and other deadly diseases in order to enhance and in order to make them more deadly. what is this experiment for? I have no answer. Why do you want to produce deadly viruses? Why do you want to produce deadly influenza or other diseases to research them? For what? The only possible answer is that this practice is legal, so that these dual-use researchers open the door to biological weapons research.
The thing that concerns me, Dylan, and also Mike, is the potential when you're talking about classified programs, but you're employing contractors, corporate contractors, so they're getting all the sort of classified diplomatic cover. They themselves are working for a private corporation. So the in terms of accountability, I don't know if there's any real accountability there. And then the other risk is you have a kind of privatized chain of command with regards to the operation and protocol. So this isn't really under the jurisdiction or the sort of it's not in the accountability stream of the government. So publicly, it's a kind of a gray area. And you're handling this really sensitive, dangerous material that's probably not fully legal in your own country, and they're offshoring it and privatizing it. I think it's very risky, actually.
Well, potentially what it does is give them some plausible some way to hide what they're doing, because they will say that the particular piece of information is commercially sensitive and therefore can't be released to the public. This is often used as a mechanism for avoiding freedom of information or other forms of getting some transparency in what's going on.
That's right. So that's a nice convenient loophole area. So much less accountability in the corporate sphere, right? Because then you're into the legal sphere. So in order to get disclosure in the corporate sphere, you have to go through a whole protracted legal proceedings. So you can't just apply public pressure like you can if it's state or government run, where there's some accountability with the people. That doesn't exist in this system. So I can see the advantages of that. If your ends are nefarious ends, I can see a major advantage there. So,
I mean, Diliana, it seems to me this article has just been published on 21st Century Wire. It's a huge article. There's lots to digest and lots to read here. But looking through some of the documentation that's on here, the donor is the Department of Defense, so they're providing the money. And, for example, if we look at Ukraine, they're giving that money to the Ministry of Health in the Ukraine and whatever laboratory that is then. This is really for both of you. I mean, I haven't been aware of the British government, for example, using defence money to pay for health research. So this isn't, you would expect that to come out of an aid budget or something like that if it was for health research. So there's clearly some defence element to this, but that it is staggering to me that the Defence Department is funding anything that would be other than for military purposes.
The fact that you have military research on diseases and you have military research on bioagents, I mean agents, bioterrorism agents, which can be easily weaponized, and the fact that all these projects are outsourced to private companies, which are given diplomatic status and diplomatic immunity, it speaks a lot. And sadly, people think that this is science fiction. Or I talked to my friends and they just didn't believe this could be possible. And actually, what matters is that you can't justify such a dangerous program by the means of self-defense, because here we're talking about dissemination of viruses by explosives. This means that the US is developing a network of biolaboratories which can be easily equipped with different means to spread viruses in the host countries and to use them as spy weapons. And this is very scary. This is a lot of money spent on biological research. What for? The U.S. Can't justify this money by, for example, let's say self-defense, because here we are talking about military biolaboratories abroad, which have nothing to do with the U.S. Personnel in these countries. I saw the projects, I checked all the projects available, and I couldn't find a single project related to the health of the U.S. military personnel abroad. All the projects were related to the citizens of the host country. All of the projects were related to the Georgian people or the Ukrainian people. I never found a single word about the U.S. military personnel abroad. Because if this program was to assist the health of the U.S. soldiers, then there would be a research on the U.S. soldiers. Nothing like this. All the projects were related to the local population in the countries where the U.S. biolabs are located.
Yeah, and let me just underline as well, historically, the whole concept of biological warfare is not a new concept. I mean, this goes back thousands of years. So, you know, everything from tuberculosis to bubonic plague to rabbit fever and botulism toxins and so forth has been used by militaries in different ways, smallpox and things like that throughout history. But in terms of two high-profile deaths, the anthrax, high-profile anthrax attacks in 2001 in the United States, the award-winning Army biologist Bruce Evans, who was meant to be testifying in that case, was magically suicided in 2008 before being charged, actually, with the alleged anthrax mailing. So his death was, to me, Mike, eerily similar to that of David Kelly, Dr. David Kelly, who also worked in high security bioweapons labs like Portendown in the UK. So there's a lot of secrecy surrounding this side of the U.S. Military and probably Britain as well. So there's a lack of transparency in this sector, and it's so often it seems to me justified with they're researching how to basically protect us from a bioterrorist threat and so forth. I just don't see any other states developing this stuff other than the U.S. So the U.S. is the producer of the threat, as far as I can see. There's not, I mean, aside from Hollywood films, they say, oh, you know, Goldfinger or, you know, Dr. No's working on something in their underground lab or whatever in some island. And so that's meant to, in the American public's mind, that's meant to be the main threat, or some Al-Qaeda rogue cell that might get a hold of an ex-Soviet bioweapons culture and so forth. But I don't see that happening. I see the U.S. as really being the real progenitor of the threat here. This is very worrying. But Diliana, just before we finish, and thank you for your work on this. It's a tremendous subject. I know that there's a lot more to dig and to explore here. But just before you go, just tell us. I'm just interested in this diplomatic immunity thing. And this is exactly what we saw with the Silk Airlines flights trafficking the weapons into terrorist hands in Syria. We see again this theme of diplomatic immunity given to contractors working in this field. So, you know, is this something to be concerned about in terms of is this how the U.S. is operating in a private fashion under diplomatic immunity in general? Is this seems to be common now?
Seems like this is the normal practice used by the CIA to cover up and to provide cover to its agents. I have no other explanation as to why you give diplomatic immunity to biologists. They're supposed to work for the benefits and for the health of the people and so on. Why are they in need of diplomatic immunity? Why do they need diplomatic vehicles? Why do they need to have security clearance? Because according to the requirements posted in the documents which I obtained by the Federal Contracts Registry, according to these requirements, the staff working and performing work at the Luga Center or Kazakhstan laboratory or the Ukrainian laboratories must be U.S. citizens with security clearance, meaning that here we are talking about not only sensitive information, we are talking about security clearance, which is in some of the cases and according to some of the documents, top secret, meaning that we have very serious and very dangerous military program, which is kept in secret by the public. And it's very, very worrying and very scary. And I hope that more people will come forward. And I urge the people in Ukraine, in Georgia, in all these countries affected, just to come forward, not to be afraid and to speak up, because otherwise we have no chance to stop this offensive military program. It is against all of us. While the weapons shipments to Syria, they were really very serious, but they were in just one area and one part of the world. Here we have bioweapons, which can be potentially used in every part of the world. And we can't. We cannot defend ourselves. You cannot defend yourselves by an aerosol of anthrax. And if you look at the documents which we posted today on 21st Century Wire, you can find a special technology for aerosol sprayers, which have been developed by the U.S. Army. This is very worrying. This means that they can spread a lot of dangerous pathogens and toxins via aerosol sprayers. And you cannot do anything to defend yourself.
Yeah, all sorts of delivery systems, air, spray, smoke. It's all detailed in Diliana Kitchenera's report up on 21stCenturyWire.com. And it's titled WMD America Inside the Pentagon's Global Biological Weapons Industry. And fantastic report, Diliana. And thank you very much for sharing that with us. It's a very important subject. And I think the more people know about it, probably the better in terms of public safety. So we really appreciate that.
Thank you for having me, and yet again, my appreciation for your great job and giving me the opportunity to be part of your team today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Diliana Getiniera, and there's a link to her Twitter account as well, so you can follow her on Twitter. That's up on the show page right now, as well as a link to the article, so please go check that out. Please share that with your friends as well. Get some feedback on this amongst your circle of friends on social media. See what people think about this. I think this is quite an amazing story and something that most people aren't going to generally see every day. So she's really put together a good comprehensive report here. It's pretty shocking, actually. But we'll be seeing more of that in the near future, I think, I predict. But we're going to take a short break and we're going to connect a final segment of Overdrive. We're going to hopefully connect with our friend and culture and sport correspondent for the Sunday Wire, Basil Valentine. After this break, I'm your host, Patrick Kenningson. I'm here with Mike Robinson. This is the Sunday Wire. We'll be right back.